Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by SuperValu Insurance, looking out for you and yours with our new life and mortgage protection insurance.
But first, last week, primary school teacher Darren Coleman received an apology from the HSE about the care of his wife. In his statement afterwards, Darren said he didn't want any individual to blame themselves, but he also said something has to change in the way we treat people with mental illness. In October 2020, Darren's life changed utterly. His wife, Nicola Keane, killed their baby son, Henry. She was suffering with postnatal depression. She then left the house where Darren was sleeping, and she took her own life. Well, Darren joins me now in studio. Darren, thanks so much for coming in today. And I know this isn't easy for you.
Yeah, it isn't, Miriam, but thanks for inviting me in.
Thank you so much. And I'm so sorry about what happened both to Nicola and to Henry. Look, let's go back, Darren, if that's okay. We'll start by getting to know a little about you and Nicola. Where you're from and how did you both meet?
So I'm from a small village just outside Ballina, where Nicola is from. It's just a 10-minute drive, and we met at a house party when I was 17. My mum and dad were away for the night, and they had told me to mind my younger brothers, and I got a call saying there was a little house party. So I said I'd escape for an hour or two and went to the edge of the road, went tumming for a lift, and got a lift in by a lovely little old nun that brought me into town.
For her.
Yeah. So from there, we headed to NUI Galway, me and Nicola, not the nun. And we did respective courses. Nicola did nursing in NUIG and I did arts in Galway. And I suppose after finishing our courses, Nicola moved to Dublin and started working in St. James's Hospital in the respiratory ward, where she worked for close to 10 years. And I worked as an archaeologist for 2 or 3 years myself before retraining as a primary school teacher and following her to Dublin.
When did you decide to get married, the pair of you?
We got married in 2014, and 2017 then was a big year in that Nicola retrained as a paediatric nurse and started working in Our Lady's Hospital in Crumlin, the children's hospital, and we also bought a house in Lucan. And then in February 2020, beautiful little boy Henry was born and brought into the world, which was changed everything for me.
And he really was beautiful. You showed me some photographs earlier, and what a beautiful little boy he was. But of course, early 2020, we always remember, Darren, that was the pandemic, that was lockdown. It's not easy having a new baby. So was it difficult?
Yeah, it was difficult. Like, as you said, I suppose would have been through COVID, I was working remotely as a teacher, so I was able to spend every day with Henry from the get-go, and supports were that bit harder to come by. And Henry, he was very irritable for the first 3 months. He would only sleep if you were walking with him, holding him. So he wouldn't sleep in the cot or in the bed. He had to be walked, which was obviously difficult for myself and Nicola. You were just taking short little naps here and there. So you were just tired all the time, I suppose. Yeah, but we had actually, there was a great consultant paediatrician in Connolly Hospital that took on Henry's case, and she had said that he was the most challenging child she'd ever come across in all her years, but he was going to get better. And it was one day after 3 months, it was like he decided, he woke up and said, I'll give sleeping a try today. And he started taking a bottle the same day, and he just changed and became this beautiful little character, playful, inquisitive, just curious about the world. He literally changed from that day.
And of course, it was made more difficult because your parents were in Mayo, so they weren't around, which can be great help. And Nicola's mum and dad were already in heaven.
Yeah. Yeah. I suppose like you had your 5K limits, you had your 10K limits. Mum and dad got up a few times. We got down to Ballina ourselves maybe 2 or 3 times, but I suppose you didn't have that very closeness, so it made it that bit more difficult.
So when, like, we all remember like the exhaustion of a newborn baby, and he was particularly challenging because he didn't like sleep at all. But when did you realise, Darren, that maybe Nicola wasn't just exhausted, that there was something else going on?
It wasn't until 2 weeks after Henry had come out of this little phase. He'd been booked in for some tests in Crumlin, so we said we'd bring him in. And it was while in Crumlin Hospital, Nicola confided in staff there that she was of low mood, that she had no love or bond with Henry. So that was the first time. And that day we had our first meeting on the 7th of July with the community mental health team for our region. And that's where she was diagnosed with severe postnatal depression. Before that, for me, there was no idea of it. It was just the two of us were extremely fatigued, extremely tired, but we were doing everything. But that was the first instance.
And how concerned were you both at that stage about that? And did you find it easy to talk to Nicola about it or not?
It was difficult. It was an overwhelming day. You were being told that particular day as well that I wasn't to leave Nicola alone with Henry, but never informed as to why. So this person you'd been together with for 17 years, I had to monitor full time when they'd have a bat to increase that bond. I stood at the door and would constantly check on them. Or if she brought Henry up to change him, I'd follow. It was a lot to take in that day between the postnatal depression, between monitor Nicola full time, the course of treatment, and nothing. I wasn't educated on this.
And what treatment at that stage was offered to Nicola?
So she, the very next day, we had our first house visit. So Nicola, I read 9 months later, was promised daily contact, which would include face-to-face contact, us visiting the community healthcare centre, home visits, or a phone call. And I discovered afterwards, in the 106 days between Nicola being said that she was postnatal depression and their deaths, she was only seen 31 times, which was 29% of the promised daily contact.
And another thing I think I read, I'm not sure if you said it, that she, part of her depression, Darren, was that she felt she hadn't been good to the baby, she wasn't a good enough mother to the baby, which is so sad.
It is, yeah. She had stated that she had botched him in some way. Nicola, she told the truth. Like, often they say that mental health, people suffering mental health will hide the illness. She communicated with all her team very clearly that she was sick. She was telling them how sick she was, that she needed help. And just reiterating again, I'm not here to blame any of the people involved in her care. They did their jobs. They were following certain guidelines and a template. They tried their best. But things need to change in that if you see, obviously, dangerous tendencies, etc., then the immediate family has to be told.
And you were great for minding the baby, Nicola. You went to all her medical appointments as much as you could. Something along the line you said to you that you needed to do more. That comment stayed with you, didn't it? And did you interpret that as some kind of blame?
At the time, I didn't really focus on it. It's since then when I attend counselling that comment really strikes me, and it really, really hurts me. And we speak a lot about that a lot in counselling, because with Nicola on her medication and obviously the sleeping pills, I did all his feeds at night. I did all his changes. I walked him if he cried in the morning. I did his breakfast in the morning. Yeah, the comment was very unnecessary.
Mm. But look, you were due then to go back to work at the end of August as a national school teacher. And you asked about that, didn't you? What did they tell you?
Yeah, so that was my last meeting face to face with the community healthcare team. It was on the 11th of August. And I just emphasised how I would be going back to work in 2 weeks' time. And they said, that's fine. She's doing well. Actually, they wrote in their notes that her mental health had improved. So I had been one month previous that I was told to monitor Nicola, to a month subsequent that things had improved. So I went home from that meeting overjoyed, to be honest, that they had shown improvement, because obviously my trust was with the team. And yeah, I went back to work fully focused that everything was going in the right trajectory.
And I know Nicola was an adult and her rights need to be respected. But I wonder, where did the child safeguarding rights come into play in terms of Henry's rights?
Yeah, that's one of the biggest concerns for me even now. I suppose a key date in all this would have been the 1st of October. Nicola would attend play therapy sessions in Crumlin Hospital with a child psychiatrist just to help develop that bond that she was concerned about and that she was lacking. They would record Nicola playing with Henry and just analyse the video the following week. But at this particular play therapy session, the psychiatrist was very concerned about Nicola's state of mind and rang her mental health team and said she's probably psychotic. But it was 7 days before they saw Nicola face to face. And for me, that was the pivotal moment. Like, she should have been assessed within 24 hours and I should have been contacted immediately concerning maybe admitting her to a psychiatric hospital. And that's where the child safeguarding approach was lacking for me. They allowed Henry, many people, to go home with a probably psychotic person, and nobody called me. They knew I was at work every day.
So did anyone ever, Darren, mention to you the words delusions or psychotic episodes?
No. I received the report 9 months after the deaths of my family, and it was stated throughout the reports that she had delusional beliefs. 9 days prior to the deaths, they had written that home visits need to be increased, but none of this was ever communicated with me.
That seems absolutely extraordinary.
It really does. Yeah, definitely.
Now, I know it's difficult, but do you mind going back to that night in October 2020?
Okay.
Just tell me from your perspective what happened.
It was a normal Wednesday for us. We always had a late walk in the evening. It allowed Henry just to get that little bit tired. And Wednesday was bath days, so we came home. We gave him a bath. Nicola went for a shower, so I dried Henry, brought him out to the ball pit, the playpen, just played with him for a few minutes. And after Nicola had a shower, she settled him and was just put him down for bed. And we were both downstairs then till around 10:30, just watching a little bit of telly. Then we just went upstairs at 10:30. And as we were going upstairs, I could hear just Henry very unsettled, just crying out of the ordinary. Nicola was up there and he wouldn't settle. I just went in, washed my teeth. Then I came back out. I took Henry, walked him. He still wasn't settling. Nicola got changed and ready and got some Calpol. And then she said, I'll just take him out to the spare room and just I'll walk him there and he'll settle in a few minutes. And so I just lie down the bed, and possibly 10 minutes later, I could still hear Henry crying. So I went back out and I said, I'll take him. You go into bed. And she said, no, you have to work in the morning. Not in a pushy way, but more in a kind of in a caring way that you have to be up early in the morning. I'll take him. And yeah, next thing I remember was being woken in the middle of the night by knocking at the door and seeing Garda lights outside.
And when you went to the door, what happened?
Well, so I looked out the window and I shouted for Nicola. I said, the guards are at the door, but I just continued downstairs and they said, are you Nicola's husband? I said, yeah. And they said, we found her car. And I just said, where's Henry? And they just had a confused look on their heads. So I ran straight upstairs and found Henry. I knew he was dead from seeing him. I knew because I held him. He was floppy in my arms. There was blood under his nose. He was gone at that stage. I knew that. So I just said goodbye and I brought him downstairs, and the guards and the paramedics said they'd do CPR, but I knew he was dead at that stage. And he was definitely, I could feel it. There was no life in him.
And that was medication.
Yeah.
That she had applied. I assume the guards were fabulous, were they?
Yeah, very good. Yeah, it was really good. Community, Lucan Guard and Gabba, she was always in touch with me. And was spent the 2 days at the inquest as well when she didn't have to. So she was excellent throughout. And yeah, there was a lot of special people that were there for me throughout, like my own solicitor when I went to her. When I got the report after 9 months, I just said, look, I can take anything. If there's nothing there, just be honest with me. That's all I wanted. And she just said, there's huge red flags here, Darren. And she put in tremendous work from June 2021 till last week.
It's Rachel Liston.
Rachel Liston, yeah.
Did you call your parents?
Yeah, I called my parents. Obviously, they live in Mayo, so they came straight away. My principal, who was fantastic, she was the first person there. I have an aunt and uncle in Dublin, so they came across from Ballinteer as well. So they were immediately there for me and kind of comfort me. And yeah, so it was, you needed those people around you because you had no idea what was going on.
At that moment, did you feel anger towards Nicola or just great sadness?
At that moment, confusion. At that moment, confusion. I just couldn't comprehend what happened. So I had no idea what had gone on. I suppose anger did come into it after that. But in the immediate aftermath, it was definitely confusion.
And now, how do you feel?
I suppose, like I've been going to counselling since November 2020, and it's very important for you to talk. It's allowed me to kind of talk about things that I never talked about before. I suppose not see Nicola as this monster, but as a really, really ill person, a frightened person who was screaming for help, but not getting the help. So yeah, like you've good days and you've bad days. You've kind of, I didn't know I'd this much kind of inner strength in me, so I'm kind of lucky that way. The last 3 years, I've had this fight for getting justice, and probably the next part of the process could be a tough one because the fight is finished last week, and now you have a lot more time to myself, and I suppose I have to box up all my notes and all the reports and everything I filled out and try to think what I do next.
When you went through them over the years, all the details of the report, Darren, what struck you about them when you were reading about her care?
Just how much was hidden from me and how much wasn't hidden from them. They could all see that she was delusional. They could all see that she was suffering from psychosis. They could all see that her mental state had deteriorated really badly, but it was all unknown to me that I was going about my life in the impression that she was improving, because that was the last meeting I had on the 11th of August. And to me, we were to have Henry's christening 2 weeks after that. We had just asked Nicola's sister and husband to be godparents. 3 days after the deaths, we were to go to Salt Hill because it was on my midterm, and we had a place booked in Salt Hill for a few days and to go down to Ballinlough from there. So it was all, we'd spoke about Christmas, it was all kind of future planning that we spoke of. But she spoke of her real thoughts to the professionals.
So the HSE, they did apologise, but what would you like to see now? I mean, it seems to me extraordinary that you knew nothing about the psychosis.
Yeah, and there was two main things for me. Like, the first would be that a priority is made that immediate family members, be it husband, wife, partner, or just a nominated next of kin, be informed about your loved one's treatment, especially when it could affect others, specifically a child. Like, it's engagement is key in this. Open lines of communication has to be there. It just has to change, because there has been more tragedies since. Unfortunately, there will be more tragedies if things don't change right now. And so that would be my first thing. Secondly, I think there has been a lot of good in Ireland, how we have encouraged people to speak about mental health. And you have things like, I suppose, the Green Ribbon campaign, which I suppose it looks to spread awareness of mental health and ending that stigma, but that's not where the problem is in the mental health system. The enormous gap is in the care being given to those that are suffering from depression or postnatal depression or psychosis. That's where the HSC and the Minister for Mental Health, Mary Butler, that's where they have to prioritise things and focus on things, because people are talking about things more about their mental health, but it's how the state is responding to seriously ill people like Nicola was. That's where the mental health system is broken.
You feel, Darren, that if you're physically ill in Ireland, by and large, you get very well treated. But if you're mentally ill, it's a different story.
Yeah, and I think if you ask anyone, they'd say that one of, I suppose, the key recommendations from the inquest into Nicola and Henry's case back in September, the jury recommended that there be specialised psychiatric mother and baby units be set up in Ireland. We need these open quickly. In Ireland, we have none. In the UK, they have 22. Why are Irish women being forgotten about and not having the same very, very key important facilities needed? Statistics show 1 in 5 women, pregnant women, will deal with mental health problems during pregnancy or in the year afterwards. Irish women are being forgotten about.
As we end this interview, how are you doing yourself now?
Yeah, great. That's tearful on the way over here. It just came out of nowhere. It just happens like that. I'm more positive. My counsellor always reminds me a few weeks in all I want to be happy again. And yeah, I do have instances of happiness. There's a lot of key special people around me that I surround myself with. Kind of positive about things. Kind of just training for the Dublin Marathon this year, being active, eating well, just things that I can focus myself on that are, I suppose, inside my parameters.
And finally, do people know what to say to you? Do they come up to you? Do they ask you about Henry? Do you like them to ask you about Henry?
No, I think maybe it's possibly an Irish way. Just people find it. They think they'll upset you if they ask, but it actually upsets more when they don't ask, that kind of way. Like, I love talking about Henry. I suppose there's only few people that do ask about him or what he was like. So that, yeah, that probably upsets me more when people avoid the key questions that you want. So, like anything, we encourage people to talk about things, and I'm not going to break down if they ask me about him, and if I do, I do.
Well, he was a beautiful little boy, Henry. I'm so sorry, Darren, about what happened to Henry and to Nicola. And thank you very much for coming into chat with us today, and mind yourself.
Thanks very much.
And of course, if anyone listening are affected by our conversation, Darren, they can contact Pieta House on 1800 247 247 or the Samaritans on free phone 116 123, or they can go to rt.ie/helplines for more information. We'll take a break.